According to Bruce Feiler, the figure that has shaped the core values of the United States more than any other is Moses. And in his latest book, America's Prophet Moses and the American Story, he traces the influence of the biblical prophet throughout our history, from the Mayflower to President Obama. Mr. Feiler is the best-selling author of Walking the Bible, Abraham, and Where God Was From. His latest is published by Morrow, and I'm pleased that it has brought Bruce Feiler back to our show today. Hello.
Always great to be with you, Leonard. Thank you.
So what is it about Moses' story that has made him so significant to Americans? I would have thought a Christian saint would have had more resonance with the largely Christian early settlers.
I think maybe the most surprising discovery of this several-year-long journey, in which I went to all the key moments in American history, sailed on Plymouth Harbor, climbed the Bell Tower of Independence Hall, retraced the Underground Railroad, tried on Charlton Heston's robe from the Ten Commandments, is that Moses, in almost every way, I would say, is more important to America even than Jesus. Of course, Jesus was important to American history. America was 100% Christian at its founding, essentially, and is 80% Christian today. But if you look at the themes of Jesus' life, they are poverty alleviation, charity, spreading the good word of the gospel. If you look at the themes of Moses' life, it is standing up to authority, taking an oppressed people, and forming a nation of laws, dreaming of a promised land. That has been very central. So starting with the pilgrims, in fact, I mean, actually Columbus Day is coming up. Columbus compared himself to Moses. But really it was the pilgrims who introduced it. They were an oppressed people. For the first time they could read the Bible. The Protestant Reformation says you can read it yourself for the first time. They were crossing a tumultuous sea. They were going to the New World, which at the time was a wilderness. And so they literally on the Mayflower called King James the Pharaoh, said, not since Moses has there been a more important journey. And when they got to Cape Cod, got down on their knees and thank God for taking them across their Red Sea.
And is this something that is particularly American? Would Moses have resonated with people throughout Europe before the New World was explored?
That's a great question. And the short answer is no. Really, the story of Moses would have lived 3,200 years ago in ancient Egypt. It was written down in the Hebrew Bible 2,500 years ago. And for most of the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church said you couldn't read the story, right? A priest had to read it for you. And there weren't even that many Bibles. It used to take 2 monks 4 years to transcribe a Bible. Not until the Reformation, the printing press, really did the story even become open. And by the time of the Revolution, it really becomes the go-to narrative. So on, you know, if you think on July 4th, 1776, I got the minutes out from the Continental Congress. Immediately after they passed the Declaration of Independence, they asked a three-person committee to come up with a new seal, pendant seal, like they used in the 18th century. Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams. I mean, three of the five drafters of the Declaration. That's how important it was. 6 weeks later, they make their recommendation, Moses leading the Israelites across the Red Sea. Even they thought he was our founding father.
It's interesting because Moses never made it to the Promised Land. He was prevented by God, and Joshua was actually the leader who came across.
One of the reasons I think that the story resonated so much, and it kind of surprised me, is that really it is a failure narrative in a lot of ways. He does lead the Israelites across the Red Sea through the 40 years kvetching and complaining, go the stiff-necked people, and then he stops short. And so the pilgrims—
And he gives them laws.
Well, and there is that tension really between freedom and law. So you think about the Revolution— Washington, right, leads America through the Revolution, said the same deity who led the Israelites out of Egypt led us through the Revolution. Then there's a similar period of lawlessness. He's then summoned back to chair the Constitutional Convention. When he dies in 1799, two-thirds of the sermons compare him to Moses. And it happened again with Lincoln, specifically because he didn't make the Promised Land, as you were saying, Moses does not. And, of course, Martin Luther King the night before he dies.
Well, how much of this was actually religious? Because the founders of the United States were influenced by the Enlightenment. Edmund Burke was accused of being an atheist. Some of the others in the Enlightenment questioned the Bible, the veracity of the Bible. So is this more a metaphor, a symbolic thing, or was this an expression of religiosity?
I think different times for different people. So I think in the 18th century, it was precedent in a lot of ways. Like, you know, don't take our word for it. Moses did it. A few years ago.
You mean the pilgrims, for example?
Well, the pilgrims were more religious. I think
And they said they were the chosen people.
Yeah, they were fulfilling the biblical. They were fulfilling the biblical story. I think that with the founding fathers, something different. Two political scientists, you'll love this actually, set out to read everything published in America between 1760 and 1805. Was 15,000 documents. And they wanted to settle the dispute. Was it the Enlightenment or was it the classics that were more important? The opening sentence of their conclusion is basically the book most quoted, to our surprise, is Deuteronomy, the last book of Moses. I think with the slaves, if you move forward back, you know, in the years before the Civil War, they were, remember, Christianity was imposed on them because they had come from Africa with their own religions, and they used this story like, oh, well, Moses could be free, we can too. So the slave spirituals, Go Down Moses was the national anthem of slaves. Harriet Tubman adopted the alias Moses on the Underground Railroad. So then, again, you've got religion for them, and then by the 20th century, I think secular language begins to take over, but Moses kind of decouples himself from the Bible and really becomes the language of the American dream.
Didn't you find parallels between the early days of the United States following the Revolutionary War and the state of Israel?
Well, there's been a lot, absolutely. And I think that...
And it relates to the Exodus in the Bible.
Yeah, because there is this, again, this tension between freedom and law. And so that the Ten Commandments follows this period of lawlessness in the desert. Same thing. Same thing with the United States. And looking forward, after Lincoln is assassinated, again, most of the sermons compare him to Moses. And it was Americophiles in France who wanted to pay tribute to Lincoln and the story of freedom with the Statue of Liberty, also modeled on Moses. So the spikes around her head and, back to law, the tablets in her arms, taken from that moment that Moses comes down Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. America at that point had become the symbol of the Promised Land, law and freedom in tension with each other.
When the Statue of Liberty was given to the United States, did Americans recognize the Mosaic connection?
Absolutely. Jose Marti, the Cuban patriot, wrote on the first day on her inauguration in 1886 that she was poised as if to enter the Promised Land. And it was Emma Lazarus, of course, who was not a particularly religious Jew, who was kind of reclaimed her Judaism after the immigrants started coming from the pogroms in Russia, and all through the New Colossus, the poem "Give Me Your Tired, Your Poor, Your Huddled Masses," that's full of Exodus imagery, and so it really was recognized at the time.
Considering the anti-immigrant feelings today, to the point where you can't fashion a health bill without excluding immigrants, do you think that we've moved past Moses?
Barack Obama in March 2007 stood up in Selma, Alabama, on the occasion of the march, one of the 40th anniversary of one of the marches, and said, "The civil rights pioneers are the Moses generation. But you got stopped short of the Promised Land. Remember, we still have to cross over the river. I'm going to be the head of the Joshua generation. I'm going to take us across the river." So Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton with the New Covenant, George W. Bush told me personally in the Oval Office that he was inspired to run for the White House after a sermon at his second inaugural in Texas, said Moses was not a man of words, but he was inspired to lead, called to lead by God. Obama, using the Moses story almost monthly now in the White House, held the first Passover, as we know, in the White House. Absolutely has resonance today, especially in a moment of troubled times, because in every troubled time, people have turned to the story for inspiration and hope.
My guest is Bruce Feiler, whose latest book is America's Prophet, Moses and the American Story. It's published by Morrow. We've been talking about the Enlightenment, but the Masons played a major role in the thinking of the Founding Fathers. Now, the Masons were not religious. In fact, many religious people considered them to be the enemy.
Well, but one of the reasons that the religious people don't like them is that they believe in a universal being, but they're non-denominational. And there was a great moment. If you go down to anybody with an earshot of us, if you go to the Federal Hall on Wall Street, they actually have there a little display from Washington's inaugural, which took place in April 1789. And everything was all set up, and Washington said, I want a Bible. But he didn't want a denominational Bible, so we sent him to the Mason Lodge, which was just up the street, and they brought this Bible. It's now called Washington's Bible. It's been used probably, I think, almost 20 inaugurations in American history. And he introduces this idea. It's not in the Constitution that we need a Bible. You know, queens used to do it, or kings used to do it in England, either one, for their swearing-ins. And it said he picked an accidental passage, but he actually put his hand on the last verses of Genesis. And one of the things I do in America's Prophet is I think it was purposeful, because that is a moment when the brothers, the tribes of Joseph, are feuding. And yet they come together, and he kind of predicts the Exodus. And I think he's sending a message to the disputing brothers with that decision to use the Mason Bible, because it's non-denominational, at the first inauguration.
Well, we're still arguing over the separation of church and state in this country. To some degree, he's sending a mixed signal, isn't he? Because he wants the Bible, even though he wants a Mason's Bible.
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, this whole debate about is America a Christian country or not, I mean, it's so old, and in some ways it's tedious. It misses the point because it was, as you said at the outset of our conversation, it was white Protestants who introduced the Moses narrative into American history. And because it was already there, blacks, Jews, women, now gays, all using the same story, the Liberty Bell, which has a quote from Moses on it, has become this icon. And they used to tour it during the suffragette movement, and they chained the clapper to the side of the bell, said, we're not going to ring this bell again until women could have the right to vote. So they take advantage of this Moses story, liberty for everyone, nurturing the poor, uplifting the hurting, that is in the Moses narrative. White Protestants put it there. Everybody else benefited in the centuries to come.
So you're saying that the inclusion of Moses so often has little to do with religion?
I think
he's more a symbol of
I think
other
today, things. Yes. I mean, I think that basically after the Civil War, the Bible begins to decline and secular language begins to take over. So with DeMille in the 1956 Ten Commandments, the fifth highest grossing movie of all time, he basically turns Moses into an icon of the American century so that he actually appeared in the beginning of the movie and said, this is about the Cold War. I mean, it's not when it's shown on TV today, but in the movie, he would say, the Israelites, you know, they represent God's law, and the Egyptians represent the whims of a dictator. And the last shot of the movie, Moses hands the Book of Life to Joshua's successor, walks to the top of the mountain, quotes the Liberty Bell, proclaim liberty throughout the world unto all the inhabitants thereof, even though that's from Leviticus, which is three books earlier, and then recreates the pose of the Statue of Liberty. I mean, this is all in DeMille's notes. It was very purposeful. He kind of walks Moses through the symbols of America to make him a symbol of America enlightening the world.
And the Pharaoh is a communist dictator?
Oh, absolutely. And I met DeMille's granddaughter who was on the set, had an affair with Yul Brynner's chariot driver that was such a scandal it was reported in Time magazine in 1956. And I was kind of trying to be very nice because she was very kind to meet me and to give me access to his private records. And I said, so is this about communism? She's like, darling, the whole movie's about communism. You know, when he enslaves his people, that's a dictator. When he kills at whim, that's a dictator. But you just don't have to spell it out. But
Bruce, I remember seeing the movie when it came out. I was young. And all of that was lost on me. What I remembered was the parting of the Red Sea, some of the other special effects.
Behold his mighty hand.
So do you think that...
Wait a minute.
That most people did get that?
Well, one of the things that DeMille did was he persuaded Paramount to make 4,000 stone replicas of the Ten Commandments to put in public squares around the country. He dispatched Heston, Brenner, these people, to inaugurate them. One of those was on the grounds of the State House in Texas. It became the basis for the 2005 Supreme Court case that said it was okay to have the Ten Commandments. So a publicity stunt for Paramount becomes the basis for landmark U.S. law. Now, whether everybody got it, what was the scariest thing in 1956? Answer, nuclear war. So for the 10th plague, he uses a green fog. That's not in the Bible. A green fog to represent a nuclear cloud because it could go under doors and through windows. And that's what he represented. It used to be a man with a sickle. That was what it used to be. He, in a duck and cover age, he goes right to what people were most anxious about, which was the Cold War.
It's interesting that in black religious music, the two most powerful images are the manger, because because people weren't allowed at the inn, and of course Moses, let my people go.
Go down, Moses, you know, way down in Egypt land. That was called the national anthem of slaves. And when they sang it on the Underground Railroad, what was interesting, and Frederick Douglass writes this in his memoir, that the white overseers said, hey, look, they're worshiping our God. You know, they've taken our Christianity. But when the blacks are singing it, they're sending codes. Oh, on Thursday night, there's going to be a conductor coming. When Harriet Tubman was using these spirituals, she had different spirituals to say come or don't come. And she, as I was saying earlier, adopted the alias Moses, and you would see these wanted posters around the Mid-Atlantic where she was, saying, wanted Moses, dead or alive. So here, 50 years earlier, had, you know, Jefferson and Franklin saying he should be the seal, and now that everyone wants him locked back into shackles.
And Abraham Lincoln was also compared to Moses and included certain biblical sounding phrases into his speeches, the Gettysburg Address.
Gettysburg Address, fourscore, and that comes from a psalm, and he quotes the Exodus. So in the same way that Moses brings forth a nation devoted to liberty, Lincoln at Gettysburg brings forth a nation dedicated to freedom. And then when he dies, Henry Ward Beecher and many others, Henry Ward Beecher gave a sermon just across the from where we're sitting now in Brooklyn Heights, in which he said, not since Moses died has there been a more tragic death. And so I think he gets at what you've been kind of touching on a couple times here, which is he's not a religious person, right? He doesn't belong to a church. He had to issue a statement in his first run for Congress that he wasn't an infidel, which is kind of a catch-all term for a non-believer. And yet he's by far America's most Bible-quoting president. So there is secularism and religiosity are in tension, and both of these people can wrap around this story.
And a religious leader who had a very strong secular presence also invoked Moses, and that was Martin Luther King Jr.
His first national speech in the middle of the Montgomery bus boycott was at the Cathedral of St. John up on the Upper West Side, in which he basically says the Supreme Court was like Moses parting the Red Sea. The last speech, I stood in Mason Temple in the bowl where he gave that talk the night before he dies. I've been to the mountaintop. I've looked over. I've seen the promised land, but I won't make it there with you, but you will make it. The next day he's gunned down. And so he invokes that story. And I think what's powerful, Leonard, here is that these were not great people. They were all ordinary people who found in this story an inspiration to make themselves great leaders themselves.
Another story you connect is the story of Superman. How does that refer to Moses?
Two bookish Jews in 1938 in Cleveland, Ohio, they write the story, Moses in a basket, Superman in the spaceship escaping annihilation. I mean, here, this is perfect leading into Michael Chabon. You are a genius. And then raised by aliens, summoned to assist humanity. Superman's original name, Kal-El, El being the Elohim from the Bible. It means swift God in Hebrew.
Bruce Feiler is a New York Times bestselling author of 7 books, including Walking the Bible, Abraham, and Where God Was Born. Also, the host of the documentary series Walking in the Bible on PBS. His latest book, America's Prophet, Moses and the American Story. It's published by William Morrow. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Leonard. Always a pleasure.